The remarks of the president before a group of business paper editors, January 17, 1952, in his office.
We've been here a good many times to see you since you've been in office and before you were in office. We used to go up to the Senate office building.
That's right.
And see you. Every now and then, I hear some nice things you said about me, and so now I'm going to say some nice things about you.
You get yourself in trouble if you do.
I'll take that chance. I had the privilege of living in the apartment just below the president's apartment when he first came to Washington from Missouri, and he was a very fine neighbor. Margaret was quite a young girl then.
Yes,
1934, and kind of dates Margaret, but then I guess she doesn't care. She's a lovely girl, Mr. President. The princess told me that her visit over there was one of the most delightful experiences. She just several times came back to what a lovely girl Margaret is, and of course
I concur.
I think maybe I'd make a better hit if I talk about Margaret a little more and less about him, but but I want to say a few words about the president. I got to know him pretty intimately, and anyone that tells me that he isn't honorable and courageous and high grade, why, they've got an argument with me. And I believe that I want that to be all-inclusive.
Thank you, Papa.
I thought maybe, Mr. President, you'd like to say a few words to these gentlemen about the State of the Union, in addition to what you said the other day.
Well, I'll tell you what I would like to do, Paul. I'd like to turn around the other way and take this microphone over there to that globe and give them a lecture on world politics. Won't take it about 5 minutes.
Fine. Wonderful.
Coming through.
What I want to call to your attention particularly is the fact that the Atlantic and the Pacific are no longer barriers to our national defense. From this point to that point right there, at Chicago, is just a short round-trip flight for our modern plane. You see, that takes in, you can draw a line here, and that takes in that whole section of the country, and that breadbasket, which everybody thinks is absolutely safe. Then up here, from this point down here, is exactly the same distance as it is from over here across the pole. But that doesn't have to go across the pole. People are not yet aware of the fact that this globe, this one is 30 inches in diameter, and we'll take that 30 inches as a basis. This 30 inches in diameter in the transportation system of Jules Verne's time, when they sat around the world in 80 days, everybody thought he was crazy. Well, now, I went from Washington to Wake Island out here, 14,400 miles round trip, in less than 30 hours flying time. And you can go around the whole globe now at its biggest diameter, biggest circumference, in less time than Jules Verne ever dreamed about. In fact, you can do it in the hours that he called the day. And what I'm trying to get at is that in order to have peace in the world, we've got to see that the people who occupy these highly congested and populated countries have something to eat. And that's not
beyond the bounds of possibility. One of our greatest losses here recently was the former president of the Oklahoma A&M. In 1948, when we were trying to find out what the resources of various parts of the world were, I sent him to Ethiopia, to Abyssinia. And I don't want you to quote me, but I asked a congressman the other day where Abyssinia was, and he said it was in Asia. Well, that's where King Solomon's Ophir mines were down in that part of the world. He made a survey for me there, and he found a plateau 6,000 to 8,000 feet high, which has a temperate climate, just like we have here, and on which three crops a year can be raised. It has black soil, just like northern Illinois and Iowa and north Missouri and southeast Nebraska and northeast Kansas. It can produce food and fiber enough for 100 million people. They don't have to be there because they're already right at the door. And in this part of the world, and in that, on that plateau, they've never had cattle disease. They don't know what foot and mouth disease or Bang's disease or anything else that affects the cattle is because they've never had it. And it's not necessary for it to be introduced. Down in this section of Africa, the tsetse fly, you know, the one that puts everybody to sleep and they kill the cattle and one thing or another, they've got to the point where they can control it. That will raise enough food for 150 million more people. And in all that part of the world, the mineral resources and other things have never been touched except in South Africa where they have diamonds and gold. Over here in Liberia, there are deposits of iron ore that are equal to the Mesabi Range in Minnesota. We're using some of it. Down here, from this point, northeast, that part of the South American continent is just like our Midwest used to be. Brazil has from 500,000 to 700,000 more square miles than we have, the continental United States has. It has 42 million people, and they're all in a fringe around here. The proper development of that would feed 150 million people, and we have a project here east of Bogota that extends over into Venezuela on another plateau like the one I was telling you about down in Ethiopia that will feed another 100 million people, and it's undeveloped. Nothing's been done about it. Now, on the Orinoco River, the United States Steel Corporation has an iron deposit from which they expect to take 45 million tons of iron ore a year for use down here in southern United States. They have the independent steel companies have an iron deposit up here in Labrador from which they expect to take 55 million tons. That's the reason we need the St. Lawrence Seaway. If we don't build the St. Lawrence Seaway, Canada will, and we'll pay tribute for it. If we go in as partners, we'll have half the income. That means the stabilization of all this industrial section here around the Great Lakes. And the development of these things, Mexico has already gone to work. We've got the most progressive president in Mexico that's been there since Mexico became a republic. He's making the developments in Mexico that will raise their food and fiber so they won't have to depend on or be afraid of summit communism. That's the thing we've got to worry about. But with these developments all around the world, and the resources in this part of the world have hardly been touched. Down there, there's the greatest iron and coal mines in the world, but they've never been opened up. Tin, everything else is in here, and this part of India up here has never been looked at since Alexander went into that. Think what that would mean. If those things are properly worked out and developed, this industrial plant here never could quit working. And that's your business to see that that keeps on working. Now, I hope you'll take a map or a globe and do a little
honest student work on it and find out whether I've told you the truth or not. You can find out. And if I have, then let's do the job. So we'll never quit working in the next 100 years if these developments can be made. That's all I've got to say to you.
I'm hipped on this subject because it's the way to world peace. It's the only way to world peace. And unless we can do these things, we'll never have world peace. Because it's the have not, and here's 500 million, here's 300 million, here's 200 million. They're the have not. Now let's get them, let's help them get what they want so we can keep our industrial plant running from now on to supply them and give them a chance so they can pay for it. We don't want to give it to them. We just want to help them help themselves. Now that's point four. That's all there is to it. Well, a lot of people need to study geography because here's where our first civilization arose, right here in Persia in the Mesopotamian Valley. And that Mesopotamian Valley will still support 20 million people, just as it did in Babylon and Assyrian times. And what happened to that valley was Tamerlane and sheep.
Thank you, Joe.